information is free.
The law.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
We care.
Here to border
it shows.
The law.
The country.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not go on with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
In other words, a democratic government is the only one in those who vote for a tax can escape the obligation to pay it. Welcome, my friends, to episode 119 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's April 17th, 2009. We got Tax Day, teabagging, and the great American econo crash, 9/11 TV, truth and breakthroughs, extremism, apocalypticism, ciao! The seven signs of terrorism, torture memos, and immunity, shooter anniversaries, media memes, murder mayhem, marijuana music, and updates on the murder of William Bennett. It's insane. It's episode 119. It's MediaMonarchy.com.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
One, two, three, four. One, two.
Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you, 19 for me.
The Beatles, Revolver, Apple. And that pretty much says it, my friends. Here we are, April 17th, 2009, episode 119 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show. We just made it through a little tax day with a lot of teabagging, and we'll laugh about that and cut through it in just a few minutes. But we got to take care of the business. Media Monarchy is broadcast live every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time on the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Revere Radio Network, revereradio.net. Now, a part of your regular schedule on Free Radio Olympia, The Fro, 98.5 in Olympia, Washington, Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. Pacific Time. Boulder Free Radio, KBFR, 93.9, Cascadia Public Radio.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
FaceSpace, YouTube, Yahoo, IM, Skype, Twitter, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, Archive.org. Just some of the ways to spread the word of what is going down. And there's a lot. And we're going to get to it. One quick note. Last week's episode, of course, was a 3.5-hour extravaganza put into two parts. So make sure you got the second half. If it felt like last week's episode kind of cut off, there's another 90 minutes for you. Let's look at the top of the news as we do. It's Friday morning, just after 10 a.m. here on the Portland Radio Authority and on Google News. From the LA Times, Obama administration declares greenhouse gases a threat to the public and the public health. And we, of course, have Stephen Ratner named in SEC probe of New York kickbacks, and we're going to get to that. We've also got a small plane crash in a Florida neighborhood. And we, of course, have all the death and destruction and murder and mayhem that has been running rampant that we have been following for the last several weeks here on Media Monarchy. As we, of course, run headlong into what seemingly are always the pinnacle dates, the 19th and the 20th of April. Bay of Pigs, Columbine, Waco, Oklahoma City, Patriot, Hitler, all that. Today, the 17th, of course, being the two-year anniversary of the Virginia Tech massacre. But let's get to the taxes. Because I'm the tax man. And we began with a quote from Alexis de Tocqueville from Democracy in America, where he said, quote, "A democratic government is the only one in which those who pay, or rather who vote for a tax, can escape the obligation to pay for it." It's also interesting to note that the Mr. Wilson and Mr. Heath that George Harrison mentions there in Taxman, Wilson was the prime minister and Heath was the next prime minister. And it all ties in the backstory, of course, is George Harrison looked at how much he was getting after taxes. Tax Day 2009 and the Great American Econo Crash. We're not going to go tons into the circus of the tax day tea parties. But I, of course, expected some bit of ridiculousness to happen. And, of course, It did. White House lockdown after threat from a teabag.
This just in, we've got breaking news on White House North Lawn, which was evacuated just moments ago because teabags being thrown over the fence. You can now see a robot picking those teabags up. If you look really closely, there are these teabags protests. You don't see it?
No.
Come on, Contessa, you've got good eyes.
No, I don't. And I've said before, I need glasses. I know I need glasses, but where are we looking here?
We're
that's the thing in the middle?
You see it?
Yeah, it kind of blends in.
Right, right. It kind of blends in, but that's the beauty of robots.
They blend in. Blend in with that.
But remember, this was serious business because they evacuated the White House North Lawn. In fact, our own Mike Vaccara had to leave the scene here.
Anything gets tossed in is a suspicious item, even if it's teabags.
Even teabags. We'll move on to other stuff.
Okay, we showed you breaking news from the White House a short time ago.
Tea Party participants threw a teabag over the White House fence, causing a brief evacuation.
Thousands across the country are protesting tax policies, the bailout, and the growing deficit.
Now, tea parties that are being put on by Republican and conservative independent groups all across the country, FreedomWorks.com org claims they are in every state.
NBC's Hampton Pearson joins us from Washington, D.C. now. And the million teabag mark, so did they get a million people?
Well, that's going to be remains to be seen in terms of who's doing the counting and who's keeping score as the day plays itself out. Most of my attention has been focused, as you just mentioned, on what happened at the White House, where we did have that brief flurry of activity when apparently someone tossed a box of tea bags over the fence onto the White House lawn. That, of course, prompted a scurry of activity by security folks. The area directly in front of the White House briefly cordoned off. They brought out one of those robotic-like devices that's almost used automatically these days to examine any kind of suspicious package. And also, the collateral damage for a brief period of time, those North Lawn TV camera positions were evacuated. But meanwhile, across the street in Lafayette Park, for a couple hours, the rain-soaked Washington version of those Tea Party-like rallies, one of more than 300 events in all 50 states around the country, wasn't staged there. People who claim they are, quote, taxed enough already, the Tea acronym, if you will, they frankly found out it's a lot easier to organize in cyberspace than on the ground. They lost their permit for what was to be their symbolic tea dumping ceremony close to the White House today.
White House lockdown after a teabag threat. So, of course, we'll put it out right now that it's ha 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 giggles and titters about teabagging. And it's funny, I never thought teabagging would actually make it into the mainstream media. What I never really saw, I'm not sure if besides the giggling and laughing, if any of them ever said, this is funny because teabagging is when you hit someone in the head with your scrotum. And I learned that from John Waters' film, Pecker. 2,000 crowd Oregon Capitol Tea Party to protest taxes. This from our own Oregonian. On a day already loathed by tax haters, 2,000 people crowded the Capitol steps to protest corporate bailouts, higher taxes, and the state of government in both Oregon and in the U.S. The demonstration in Salem was one of 20 scattered throughout Oregon on Wednesday, all modeled after the Boston Tea Party in 1773 when people dumped tea to protest British taxation. From California to New York, tens, it should say, of thousands of people joined in more than 500 such tea parties across the country. Extra links in there to Raw Story and the Associated Press, and of course there's tons more video. I'd link you to it, but we're not going to listen to much. And then the rest of the updates. One of the most interesting, of course, is that the National Guard was on alert for some of the Tea Party protests. And of course we learned in one of their after-action reports that, of course, the feds were looking at the End the Fed protests back in November. But the Maryland National Guard was put on alert in anticipation of the Tea Party protests. And a Homeland Security spokesman refused to deny that protesters would be under surveillance from the Department of Homeland Stupidity. So the National Guard was on alert for the Tea Party protests. We've also, fortunately, got libertarians pointing out that both the fake sides have hijacked the Tea Party movement. And a word on that in just a moment. But that, again, is from Raw Story, and one of Ron Paul's representatives is there speaking on that. Reckless spending and taxation prolonged the Great Depression, again from Ron Paul. But over on Russia Today, there's a long video going into the meme, Obama's spending to result in mass protests.
Do you think that $12 trillion sum that you quoted, trillion with a T there, justifies these demonstrations then? Is this the voice of democracy or anarchy that we're hearing in the States?
Sure. I think that there's going to be a massive upsurge in, I hope and believe and advocate, peaceful political protest and peaceful political activism within the law to change this, because I don't think that the American people think that the federal government does a very good job of spending money. And so I think that they will say that we would rather have the money ourselves, we'd rather see our taxes cut, we'd rather see spending cut. There are certain projects that need to get accomplished, you know, for infrastructure, for, you know, roads and highways and, you know, bullet trains and so on, then sure, that's acceptable. But the idea that just spending money for the sake of spending money and giving money to billionaires, that's what Russia went through in the 1990s, and it didn't work very well.
Obama's spending to result in mass protests. More Americans wary of the tax man this year. That's from Reuters. Republicrats determined to turn Tea Parties into circus sideshows. That's from InfoWars. Perry, that's of course Texas Governor Rick Perry, was out there firing up the anti-tax crowd. That's from the Dallas Morning News. However, again, the Watson boys point out that Governor Perry's cynical effort to exploit the Tea Party and the states' rights movement is pretty phony and easy to see through. Grassroots Chicago Tea Party, organized with help from the right-wing Heartland Institute, that from thinkprogress.org. The Obamas issued their 2008 income of $2.6 million. That's from the Deutsche Press Agency. We also have Obama vowing to reform the quote-unquote monstrous tax code. And from the Vancouver Sun, Fox-driven Tea Parties fail to ignite popular uprising among U.S. conservatives. What I basically want to say is this is another classic case of the two phony left-right parties getting out in front of real issues, of real grassroots concern, and redirecting and misdirecting, and ultimately running it into the ground. So this whole Tea Party debacle just turned into another Bread and Circus sideshow, and we didn't get to address the fundamental issues. That being a direct, unapportioned tax on your income. Copycat effect. Lauren Coleman points out the Masonic origins of the Boston Tea Party, that on April 15th, there were tea parties throughout the USA. A few carrying out these 2009 symbolic acts understand the origins of the Boston Tea Party, which occurred on December 16th, 1773. The Masonic background to the Boston Tea Party is part of the twilight history of the nation. Links in there to MasonicWorld.com, as well as Wikipedia, to read more about the 2009 Tea Party protests. From CNSNews.com, the new head of Homeland Stupidity, Janet Napolitano, she can't really say if illegals will get some of the stimulus money. Can't or won't say. Something scary and important to note from the St. Petersburg Times and TampaBay.com. Debtors prison, again, In a little noticed trend blamed on the state's hard economic times, several courts in Florida have resurrected the de facto debtor's prison, having thousands of Floridans jailed for failing to pay assessed court fees and fines. The short-sighted plan threatens to run afoul of the Constitution. It appears to generate little additional revenue relative to the misery it causes and should be stopped. That, I believe, is from an editorial in the St. Petersburg Times. Links in there to read more about debtors' prisons in the U.S. and the New York Times article that points out what some of the courts in Florida have been doing. So definitely something interesting to think of. I know a good friend of mine always used to say in relation to her student loan debts, big deal, there's no debtors' prison. We mentioned the Sacramento Tent City and that they've been tagged with wristbands denoting whether you can stay or you can go. There's a video and an article where the cops go in and start issuing those folks who gotta go their walking papers. So there's about a 10-minute video. It's basically raw footage of the cops going into the Sacramento Tent City. From Global Research, Goldman Sachs tries to shut down financial blogger. Mike Morgan is his name. Mike Morgan is a registered investment advisor and a scrappy shoot-from-the-hip guy who doesn't mince his words. Recently, Mike Morgan has come under fire from investment giant Goldman Sachs for his hard-hitting website, Facts About Goldman Sachs. GoldmanSachs666.com. Now, according to the Telegraph, Goldman Sachs is attempting to shut down a dissident blogger who was extremely critical of the investment bank, its board members, and its practices. The bank has instructed Wall Street law firm Chadbourne and Park to pursue blogger Mike Morgan, warning him in a recent cease and desist letter that he may face legal action if he does not close down his website. According to Chadbourne and Park's letter, dated April 8, the bank is rattled because the site, quote, violates several of Goldman Sachs' intellectual property rights and also implies a relationship with the bank itself. Unsurprisingly, for a man who has conjoined the bank's name with the number of the beast, although he jokingly points out that 666 was also the S&P 500's bear market bottom, Mr. Morgan is unlikely to go down without a fight. He claims he's followed all legal requirements to own and operate the website, and that the header of the site clearly states that the content has not been approved by the bank. On a special section of his blog entitled Goldman Sachs versus Mike Morgan, he predicts that the fight will probably end up in court, saying, quote, it's just another example of how a bully like Goldman Sachs tries to throw their weight around. Again, links in there to all the pertinent pages on GoldmanSachs666.com. The other question actually being posed by the Huffington Post is Goldman Sachs running the plunge protection team? You know, that group who meddles in the stock market that some will say, oh, that's a conspiracy theory. It doesn't exist. There's no president's financial working group. However, from Bloomberg, as of last Friday, and I'm sure we'll see a couple more today on what Cryptogon.com always calls FDIC Friday, 23 banks have closed in 2009 and counting. So last Friday, the 10th, banks in Colorado and North Carolina were shut as rising unemployment and a loss of jobs shrinks household wealth in the deepest recession in a quarter century, pushing the toll of U.S. bank failures to 23 this year. The two latest dead, New Frontier Bank in Greeley, Colorado, with $2 billion in assets and $1.5 billion in deposits, and the Cape Fear Bank in Wilmington, North Carolina, with $492 million in assets and $403 million in deposits. They were both shut last Friday, April 10th, by state regulators. 23 banks closed in 2009 and counting. General Motors has secretly perhaps been told to basically prep for bankruptcy. But another one, and a bizarre one, from Bloomberg. Lehman Brothers sits on a bomb of uranium cake as prices slump. Lehman Brothers Holdings Incorporated is sitting on enough uranium cake to make a nuclear bomb as it waits for the prices of the commodity to rebound, according to traders and nuclear experts. The bankrupt bank, in the throes of paying off creditors, acquired uranium cake under a matured commodities contract and plans to sell it when the market improves to realize the best prices, Chief Executive Officer Brian Marshall said. Lehman Brothers, once the fourth largest investment bank, has an estimated $200 billion in unsecured liabilities left to pay. The uranium, which may be as much as 500,000 pounds, might fetch $20 million at today's price of about $40.50 a pound. This, again, said by traders who asked not to be named because of the confidential nature of the data. Marshall, that's the aforementioned CEO, Brian Marshall, I misspoke, M-A-R-S-A-L, Marshall said the trader's estimates of Lehman's uranium holding is reasonable, while declining to be more specific. Uranium has dropped for five straight months from a 55 a pound on December 1st on concerns that countries including China and India would delay nuclear power projects because of the global economic crisis and because Lehman Brothers might dump its radioactive material on the market. More than 43 million pounds of uranium oxide concentrate, or yellow cake equivalent, sold on the spot market last year, more than doubling the 2007 trading volume, according to Roswell, or rather, according to the Roswell, Georgia-based UX Consulting, UX. So, we noted, I believe, just a headline last week, of a New York bank perhaps involved in weapons trade. We're going to mention weapons trade again, but this is a nice little marriage of Wall Street and yellow cake. One last sad note on this tax day 2009 in the great American econo crash, posting from the Washington Times, pets left homeless as owners face foreclosure. And we'll shift from something sad like that into brilliant, cutting satire from the Onion News Network. The Treasury Department has issued an emergency recall of all U.S. dollars.
Good afternoon. We have a lot of information to get out, so I will not be taking any questions. As of 10 a.m. this morning, the U.S. Treasury Department has issued a full recall of all 776 billion pieces of U.S. currency in circulation. I know this must seem like a blow coming on the heels of this morning's announcement that our federal budget deficit has passed the $800 billion mark. But regrettably, these particular bills were printed with dye containing toxins that, while completely safe at this moment, will become extremely deadly Friday at exactly 12 noon. As a result, we need to act quickly. Okay, tomorrow all Americans will receive a bag like this in the mail. Just rubber band the money into neat piles and put it into the sack, and then drop the sack into your nearest mailbox. Do not, under any circumstances, attempt to burn or shred the money yourself. The federal government are the only ones that can destroy the money. We are the only ones with the proper facilities to do so.
This is a massive recall.
If you review the old laws, it is actually not so uncommon for something like this to be done. So there really is no need to panic or to review those old laws, because I just told you that it's true. We understand that this recall will be hard on U.S. citizens who will have no more money, but we assure you, if you work hard, you will be eventually able to earn it back. This is in the best interest of the American people. This dye poisoning causes your internal organs to rot from within and is really painful until you puke up your guts and die.
What recourse?
I said no questions. There really is no time to think about this. Just listen to me and send in the money. Thank you.
The Treasury Department issues an emergency recall of all U.S. dollars. You know, I should have just set up the clip without saying it was from The Onion, because it would have probably had you scratching your head there for a moment. Which, again, as I always say, is the brilliant thing about The Onion, and the bizarre thing about everything else going on in the news is how many times you have to go, is that real, quote-unquote, news, or is that The Onion? What is this? Art imitates life, imitates politics, imitates cartoons? Donald Duck and the taxes you pay to international banksters. This is a great piece from Kurt Nemo over on truthnews.us. It's that time again, the time to pay the banksters what is owed at gunpoint. Back in the day when fear of the IRS was not as prevalent as it is today, the government employed Hollywood propaganda to make the plebs feel good about forking over their hard-won earnings. In the cartoon here, produced in 1943, during the Second World War, Donald Duck is pressed into service to make Americans feel good about paying taxes. Donald's cartoon was, of course, rolled out the same year that Milton Friedman, a Treasury Department economist at the time, came up with the idea of imposing a withholding tax. Donald Duck and the Spirit of 43.
Payday! Payday! Yes, payday. Millions of dollars pouring into the hands of the American worker. Now, in the mind of the average worker, live two separate personalities. One, the thrifty.
Wait a bit, laddie. You're going to save a bit of it, aren't you?
Oftentimes, idle money burns a hole in your pocket, which brings out the other personality. The spendthrift.
Hi, big shot. Come on with me. I'll show you how to spend your dough. I got a couple of good bits.
But, laddie, I've got some better bits.
Important ones, too. When every American should pay his or her income tax gladly and proudly. This year, thanks to Hitler and Hirohito, taxes are higher than ever before. Will you have enough money on hand to meet your payments when they fall due?
We'll take care of that later. Forget it, forget it.
But you don't want to forget our fighting men, do you?
Yes, sir.
Then you'll have to start saving right away to meet your tax payments.
Listen, Chuck. Spend it. It's your dough.
Yeah, it's my dough.
Aye, laddie. It's your dough. But it's your war, too. You must save for victory.
What's money for? Spend it. Shoot the works.
Nay, nay, you must save it. Spend. Save.
Spend, save, spend, save, spend, save, spend, save, spend, save, spend, save, spend, save.
Hollywood no longer needs to make cartoons to convince us paying taxes to international banksters is the patriotic thing to do. Millions of people accept this federally enforced fleecing operation with a mixture of resignation and fear. In fact, decades of propaganda have reduced many Americans to the point where they believe forking over a huge share of their earnings is a positive thing. Of course, they have no idea the money is going to the banksters. Just less than half of U.S. residents asked say the amount of federal income taxes they pay is about right, a Gallup poll reported last week on April 8th, again, according to the UPI. Donald Duck's services are no longer required. Resources in there, again, to the UPI, as well as to reading about the withholding tax and Milton Friedman and the Spirit of 43, one of the great classic Hollywood propaganda pieces. Of course, check out things like Operation Hollywood, where, of course, the military entertainment complex has been cranking for a good 50-plus years. 60. Now it's time for 9/11 updates. TV, truth, and breakthroughs. First, from The Hollywood Reporter. Not a source I cite very often. However, in this case, Dutch TV show called Devil's Advocate has exonerated Osama bin Laden. A Dutch TV jury has found Osama bin Laden not guilty of the September 11th attacks. In the conclusion last Wednesday night to the show Devil's Advocate on Dutch public broadcaster Nederland 2, the jury of two men, three women, along with the studio audience, ruled there was no proof bin Laden was the mastermind behind 9/11. The Netherlands, home to Big Brother creator Endemol, is known for being on the cutting edge of format-based television, but even for Dutch standards, Devil's Advocate from Amsterdam production house AVRO pushes the envelope. The show features star defense attorney Gerard Spong, S-P-O-N-G, standing up for some of the world's worst criminals. In the latest show, Spong was able to convince the jury that bin Laden's connection to 9/11 was a product of Western propaganda. The jury also ruled there was insufficient evidence to prove bin Laden was the real head of terrorist network Al-Qaeda. However, the jury did rule that bin Laden is a terrorist who has misused Islam. Links in there, of course, to read about the Devil's Advocate TV series on Wikipedia, on 911blogger.com. And there's more on the 9/11 media breakthrough in Denmark, as well as a Danish scientist on TV, of course, noting his belief, and of course this goes along with the new paper that we covered, the super thermite. But of course these clips I can't play for you. However, fortunately, all the bits from Devil's Advocate are up on YouTube, and they are subtitled in English, so get them. A new book called The Ground Truth, The Story Behind America's Defense on 9/11. But the article here from Paul Joseph Watson, 9/11 Commission Counsel, John Farmer, government agreed to lie about 9/11. The senior counsel to the 9/11 Commission, John Farmer, that's John Farmer Jr., says that the government agreed not to tell the truth about 9/11, echoing the assertions of fellow 9/11 Commission members who concluded that the Pentagon were engaged in a deliberate deception about their response to the attack. Source to the Washington Post. The book without precedent. For some of the guys from the official 9/11 Commission, Kane and Hamilton, pointed out that they thought the Pentagon was stonewalling them and that they were maybe set up to fail. Continuing, John Farmer Jr. served as senior counsel to the 9/11 Commission, officially known as the National Commission on Terrorist Attacks Upon the United States, and he's also a former New Jersey Attorney General. Farmer's book about his experiences working for the commission is entitled The Ground Truth, The Story Behind America's Defense on 9/11, and is set to be released already, according to this Paul Joseph Watson piece. I found different release dates on Amazon. It doesn't look like it's out in the States until September 8th. But more and more on Rescue Me. Rescue Me heats up with 9/11 conspiracy theories, this time from TV Guide. We got a Hollywood Reporter and TV Guide. All the hard news sources here for you on MediaMonarchy.com. Rescue Me is back from its 18-month hiatus, and early episodes of Season 5 prove the show is again firing on all its raucous and raunchy cylinders. But it's also turning a more focused eye back on 9/11 and its impact on the Men of 62 truck. In doing so, this season brings mainstream attention to widespread conspiracy theories that suggest the 9/11 attacks were an inside job. Fireman Franco Rivera, played by Daniel Sinjata, who in real life subscribes to these same beliefs, becomes the mouthpiece for these ideas on the show, something Sinjata admits he wasn't expecting to see on his script pages, saying, quote, "I was pretty shocked because I happen to know for a fact that those opinions are not indicative or reflective of FX, Dennis Leary, Peter Tolan, or anybody affiliated with creating the show. What I like about the way they're addressing the topic is that they're not pre-packaging it for the audience. The reactions span the whole spectrum from agreeing to vehemently disagreeing to a great big question mark. I think it's laudable and admirable that with such a hot and controversial topic, FX was willing to even include it in the show. The flashback goes back to April 2007, where Rescue Me star Daniel Sinjata first came out for 9/11 Truth. More great work from RussiaToday.com, and it's also one of my favorite YouTube channels. They've got a nice, long, 11-minute interview with Luke Radowski, founder of We Are Change, where the video notes, and does Luke Radowski, that the U.S. media doesn't want the truth. It isn't helping in the search for the truth, says Luke Radowski from the social justice movement We Are Change.
Our team is sitting down with Luke Radowski, American activist, journalist, and the founder of the organization We Are Change. Luke, thanks for sitting down with us today. Now, can you tell us more about your organization? What kind of change are you exactly?
We Are Change is a grassroots, bottom organization that talks about real issues that the mainstream media never even wants to touch or deal with. We are activist journalists going out there asking the hard questions to journalists, corporations, big banks that the mainstream media never even dares to ask, and we get amazing reactions. We put those videos out on the internet and people get to see true, unedited, real journalism without no corporate sponsors.
What are the hard questions?
Well, we go up to members of the secretive elite Bilderberg group and we ask them, you know, we shake their hands and we ask, can you please tell us what happens when you meet with the world's elites in banking, media, corporations, and governments all around the world in secret? And whenever we ask them this question, we get amazing responses. I mean, I literally had people shaking my hand, and as soon as I stopped asking the question, this person just literally walks away from me in silence. You see just a shock on his face, and he walks away without even talking to me after I was just shaking his hand. I actually had Vernon Jordan tell me, we want it secret, you want it private, there's no need for the media to be there. And that's where they set the real policy. I mean, even chairman of the Bilderberg group came out recently and said that he helped, the Bilderberg group helped establish the European Union. And then these people are going to tell me that they don't establish policy. We keep putting them on record, and we get many important things on the record. We confront politicians about the truth behind 9/11. Our confrontation with Senator Joe Biden went viral all over the internet because we asked him what he was doing with the finance of Muhammad Atta before 9/11, after 9/11, and even on the day of 9/11 when he met with the Pakistani chief of the ISI, Mohammed Ahmed.
We'll cut it short there, but I highly recommend you check out that whole interview. A lot of good information gone over, and again, more good work from Russia Today. Two updates to this posting of TV Truth and Breakthroughs. First, jury deadlocks on whether officer lied to get 9/11 funds. This from the Washington Post. A federal judge declared a mistrial yesterday, I believe that's the real yesterday, April 16th, after a jury deadlocked on four charges accusing a former Navy commander of lying about injuries he suffered during the 2001 terrorist attack on the Pentagon to collect more than $300,000 from a victim's fund. The decision by U.S. District Judge Henry H. Kennedy came hours after the jury in Washington had acquitted the commander, Charles E. Coughlin, C-O-U-G-H-L-I-N, not to be confused with Father Charles Coughlin. He was acquitted on three counts of mail fraud. Susan Menzer, an assistant U.S. attorney, said prosecutors would tell the judge whether they intend to retry Coughlin during a hearing on May 1st. The other update, WTC office towers could be put off for decades. From the Associated Press, construction of several Ground Zero office towers could be put off for decades because of the failing real estate market, the site's owner said Thursday, citing an analysis that projected one skyscraper might not be built and occupied until 35 years after 9/11. Developer Lucky Larry Silverstein and the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey have been talking on and off for months about rewriting a three-year-old agreement that gives the developer rights to build three out of five office towers planned at Ground Zero. An interesting side note to some of these 9/11 updates. And, of course, at the end of every show, we go over some of the visitors to Media Monarchy as I look at the back end and see who's visiting and why and how. I saw that I got a comment in my email address that was posted to, I believe, the recent Super Thermite posting from Raw Story about Stephen Jones. And it was some guy saying, oh, he was, or maybe it was even on the Barry Jennings obituary posting. Of course, WTC7 eyewitness Barry Jennings mysteriously died last summer. But I noticed somebody started to leave inane comments on 9/11 related postings. And they said, oh, maybe Barry Jennings was beamed up to the U.S. Enterprise with Captain Kirk and an outside job. And I started to watch and track him real time on StatCounter, and I basically head them off at the pass on this most recent 9/11 posting, TV Truth and Breakthroughs. Where one, I said, is that what they're teaching you at Ohio State University? As I was tracking him and putting his info right back there at him. Outside job? They should at least teach you that it's the USS Enterprise. If you're going to make Star Trek jokes, if you're going to be a fucking dumbass, at least get your words right. And he retorted back, it's the Ohio State University. Get it straight. So, I already wasted a couple minutes talking about that. As I find, a lot of the message board comment things are a big flame war waste of time. Homeland Stupidity is now warning of the 7 signs of terrorism. It's the 7 signs of terrorism countdown. It doesn't matter that Al-Qaeda is not a threat to the homeland. You need to prepare for a terrorist attack regardless. This all according to PrepareMetroKC.org, a website put together by the Greater Kansas City Region's Metropolitan Emergency Managers Committee, which, of course, is funded by the Department of Homeland Stupidity, warning us in a very slick manner. And we're going to listen to this entire clip so you can really, really take this in as we go over the 7 signs of terrorism.
A terrorist attack could happen anywhere, even right here in our community. But you may be able to help detect and prevent them by learning the 7 signs of terrorism. Terrorist acts are planned, organized, and carried out by individuals or groups. By learning to recognize the signs of terrorism and by reporting suspicious activities to the proper authorities, you can help keep our community safe. When a terrorist incident occurs, it affects everyone. Being observant as part of your daily routine and reporting anything out of the ordinary could be crucial to preventing a possible terrorist plot or threat. The 7 signs of terrorism you should know about are 1. Surveillance. 2. Seeking information. 3. Testing security. 4. Acquiring supplies. 5. Suspicious behavior. 6. Trial runs. And 7, getting in position. Let's talk about each of these signs. Surveillance. When planning an attack, terrorists will often conduct surveillance of their potential targets. They want to learn about the strengths and weaknesses of the target security and find out how long it would take for emergency responders to arrive. During the surveillance phase, terrorists will also determine their routes to and from the target. Surveillance activities might include someone recording or monitoring activities at a location, drawing diagrams, making notes on maps, using binoculars, or examining floor plans or blueprints of places such as high-tech firms, financial institutions, government or military facilities. Any of these acts may be a sign that something isn't right. If you feel that you have seen something suspicious, don't dismiss it. Report the incident to police. Seeking information. The second sign is seeking information, sometimes called elicitation. This is when the terrorist attempts to gain information about an important place, how it operates, or the people who work there. Places like a power or water plant, a bridge, a school, a stadium, or a shopping mall. terrorists may ask questions about what the building is used for, building operations, deliveries, and security systems. This could be done in person, by phone, email, or regular mail. Testing security. Testing security is another way for terrorists to gather information. The terrorist might try walking or driving into restricted areas to see how security staff or police will respond. They may try to get past physical security barriers or bypass access procedures in order to assess the target's strengths and weaknesses. Acquiring supplies. Terrorists need to acquire supplies and equipment to carry out their attacks. This may include purchasing or stealing law enforcement or military equipment, identification badges, uniforms, and decals. Terrorists may also obtain explosives, weapons, ammunition, harmful chemicals, or chemical equipment. Airline boarding passes or operation and flight manuals could also be obtained and used in planning an attack. They might forge or copy personal identification, passports, or other documents. Suspicious behavior. Another sign is suspicious people who just don't seem to belong. Someone in a workplace, building, neighborhood, or business might seem suspicious because of their behavior, the unusual questions they ask, or the statements they make. If you feel that you've seen something suspicious, don't dismiss it. Report it to the police. Police officers often respond to complaints that may seem to be routine, but could result in something much more significant. Trial runs. Before carrying out the final operational plan, terrorists typically conduct a dry run or trial run. A trial run consists of putting people into position and moving them around according to the plan without actually committing the terrorist act. It could also include mapping out routes to determine traffic flow. Getting into position. The seventh sign is actually getting into position to commit the terrorist act, placing people, equipment, and supplies at or near the target. If you see suspicious activity, this may be the last opportunity you have to report it to the police. It's important to remember that the signs of terrorism for a particular incident may occur months or even years apart. If you see any suspicious or criminal activity, you should never attempt to stop a suspect. Call the police immediately and report the incident or activity. Law enforcement personnel have procedures in place to share information with local, state, and federal Homeland Security officials. The success of our securing our community depends on your vigilance, commitment, and ability to recognize the seven signs of terrorism.
Did you get all that? Anytime, anywhere, years apart, weird people, crime, it's all terrorism. So again, that's coming from Kansas City and Homeland Stupidity. And that's not the last time we're going to mention Kansas City on this episode 119 of MediaMonarchy.com. But now it's time to get into what has been the big story over the last 24, 36, 48 hours. And we'll take it from the beginning. We'll jump back to Tuesday, April 14th. This from Raw Story and Raw Replay, originally coming from thedailybeast.com. Report says six Bush officials to be indicted on torture charges. Sources have told the Daily Beast's Scott Horton that Spanish prosecutors will investigate six former Bush officials for sanctioning torture. Horton told CNN's John Roberts that Spanish prosecutors wouldn't have investigated if they had received assurances from U.S. officials that they would investigate the crimes themselves. But they didn't. So they will. Report says six Bush officials to be indicted on torture charges.
Six former Bush administration officials could face torture charges in Spain. A top Spanish judge has asked prosecutors to investigate whether key Bush aides, including former Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, should be criminally charged for allowing the torture of suspects at Guantanamo Bay. Joining me now to talk more about this is Scott Horton. He's a contributor to thedailybeast.com and also an attorney specializing in international and human rights law. Scott broke this story this morning. So we know that the judge has asked prosecutors to look into this case, Scott. Do we know if they're going to go ahead with the investigation?
Yes, sources involved in the investigation advised me yesterday that the prosecutors will be telling the court today that they have decided there's sufficient evidence at hand to justify undertaking a full-scale investigation. And moreover, these prosecutors also had meetings at the American Embassy in Madrid in which they briefed the U.S. government about this, and they pressed the question of whether there was going to be any investigation in the United States, indicating that they would not proceed with this matter if the Americans were going to investigate.
So how does this matter end up in a Spanish court?
Well, it starts with five Spaniards who were held at Guantanamo, who in fact were under investigation by this court for terrorism. And the Spanish Supreme Court concluded that they had been tortured. That launched the preliminary inquiries into this case.
All right, so we have Judge Gonzalez. We also have a number of other administration officials, including Doug Feith. Who else is on?
That's right. David Addington, who is Vice President Cheney's chief of staff. John Yoo, who's a law professor at the University of California. Jim
Haynes, who also wrote a lot of the protocols regarding the treatment of detainees.
That's correct. And the Spanish prosecutors are very much focused on what's going on in the United States with respect to the release of these documents. They mentioned to me that they're expecting to see later this week a series of other OLC memoranda released, some authored by John Yoo and Jay Bybee, another figure who's under investigation here. And they believe that these papers will help them make out their case.
So this brings us to now, and we'll get to yesterday's posting right after we look at Google News right now. 31 minutes ago, attorney David Rivkin says that the justice memos prove that the U.S. didn't torture. That's from Fox News. We've also got a video from France 24, the release of the CIA interrogation memos, and from The Guardian, Bush officials defend physical abuse described in memos. So from April 16th, yesterday, on MediaMonarchy.com, prosecute war crimes? Nope. And nope rhymes with hope. You dope. Obama, Bush, and torture. Obama releases the torture memos, yet vows not to prosecute. This from Threat Level. The Obama administration on Thursday released top secret memos outlining the legal rationale used to justify the CIA's torture of terror suspects, but vowed not to prosecute the torturers. Quote, "It would be unfair to prosecute dedicated men and women working to protect America for conduct that was sanctioned in advance by the Justice Department," said Attorney General Eric Holder. Thursday's internal memos were released after intense internal debate as part of a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit brought by the American Civil Liberties Union during the Bush administration. Obama's release of the memos is a commendable act of transparency. At the same time, though, the Justice Department lawyers are defending the previous administration's top officials accused in federal court of authorizing and carrying out torture and other abuses. Threat Level examined that whole issue in February with a link for you. Yesterday, the administration extended its protection even further and said it would defend, at taxpayer expense, other government officials or employees who find themselves before a congressional inquiry in any court, federal tribunal, or in any proceeding if they relied on the memos as a legal basis for their conduct. Many links in there to the Associated Press, the Washington Post, more on Eric Holder, the actual memos themselves from the Department of Justice, the ACLU's rundown on their FOIA lawsuit, thinkprogress.org, McClatchy, and on and on. So you can get all those memos again, straight from the Justice Department. I linked them up from the ACLU's website. And in these documents that I have not gone through fully, but again, they're all linked up for you. You can download them, read them yourself, and see that they include protecting conduct such as this from Raw Story. The Bush administration authorized the use of insects in interrogations. The Bush administration Office of Legal Counsel authorized the Central Intelligence Agency to put insects inside a confinement box as part of the administration's harsh interrogation practice, as well as throwing detainees into walls, according to memos released by Obama on Thursday. More from the New York Times, more on the memos, but here, asking the pertinent question, but of course, always stuck in the left-right paradigm, the Young Turks asking the question, why is Obama covering Bush's ass?
All right, now, unfortunately, here we go again. More on the torture memos, and there's two sets of memos here in the CIA. One is a legal justification for torture, and the other memos are the ones that actually tell you what kind of torture is authorized. Now, we already know what's in a lot of these memos. In one of the memos, it authorizes waterboarding. In another one, it allows agents that are questioning detainees to slam a guy's head into a wall. But they have two fun restrictions. One, you can't let the head go. So you have to slam the head against the wall, but hold on to it, okay? I don't know why it's that much worse if you let it go. There might be a technical reason. And number two, they leave it up to the discretion of the interrogator how hard he slams it into the wall. How that's a check, I'm not really sure. They say, hey, you know what? He might not slam it into the wall that hard. Oh, okay, good. He has discretion not to. Boo-hoo. All right, look, if you want to know anything, if anything is torture, there's a very simple test in my mind, which is, how would you feel if it was done to an American soldier? If the Iraqis or Al-Qaeda or anybody else is taking an American soldier and drowning them to the point that they're about to die, and then they pick up their head, or they take their head and they smash it against the wall, yeah, I would, and they do it over and over again. Yes, I would call that torture, absolutely. And so would everybody else in America. Now, of course, when we do it, half the country, not half, I would say about 30% of the country, the Republicans now, are like, no, hell no, they had a coming, right? So the question at hand now is Obama going to release these memos? Now, this should be a bit of a no-brainer, because Obama argued throughout the campaign that he thought it was wrong to keep those memos secret. He's against the memos to begin with as a matter of policy. So, and he's got all his top advisors saying release the memos. Attorney General Eric Holder, his White House counsel, Greg Craig, and even the Director of National Intelligence, Dennis Blair, they all say release the memos. So, what's the big controversy? What's the holdup? Well, the CIA doesn't want the memos released because there are a lot of people at the CIA who took part in this. Now, they use the excuse that, oh, they're going to come after agents. But, number one, we know that they're not going to come after agents. It's already been legislated that these agents will not be held responsible. Number two, Obama said over and over again, I will not go after the agents. The real reason the CIA objects is because, not because of the agents, but the people who authorized those decisions, including the guy that Obama was considering making the head of the CIA, a guy by the name of John Brennan, who was still the deputy national security advisor there. And the reason, by the way, he's not the head of the CIA is because progressive groups objected. And thank God they did.
That clip from the Young Turks goes on, and it asks some important questions. But again, always trapped within the phony left-right paradigm, never pointing out, of course, that whether it's Panetta or Brennan, it's all the same bunch of Council on Foreign Relations globalists. And if you'll recall, it kind of seems like Obama also campaigned on, I don't know, ending the war. Let me note here quickly that we're now into hour number two of episode 119 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's April 17th, 2009. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, coming to you live every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific time from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and the Revere Radio Network, as well as 98.5 Free Radio Olympia, 93.9 Boulder Free Radio, Cascadia Public Radio. Hopefully other things I'm not yet aware of. So let's move forward, but let's still stay within the phony left-right sandbox. And when you start to talk about and use biblical imagery and words, that's when I start to get interested. Are conservatives using apocalypticism against Obama? Glenn Beck and other conservatives have said that President Obama's policies will lead to fascism. CNN political analyst Bill Schneider calls their tactics apocalypticism.
The F word being used to describe some of the Obama administration's policies, it's not what you're thinking. This one has more to do with Mussolini and Stalin than salty language. Carol Costello has a vocabulary lesson for us this morning. Hey, Carol.
It catches your attention, though, doesn't it?
The F-bomb, of course.
The F-word, the F-bomb, right? President Obama hasn't even wrapped up his first 100 days, but his harshest critics are singing the same tune. As the Chronicle describes it, they're dropping the F-bomb as in fascism whenever they can.
This plan will require significant resources from the federal government.
That's the sound of big government. You would expect conservatives to compare the president and his economic rescue plan with maybe
the New Deal for the American people.
FDR and the New Deal. But what's up with this? Linking the president with the old communist Soviet national anthem? And this?
We're in socialism now. Well, that's not our final destination. Our final destination is happy-faced fascism.
That's right, fascism. The big F-bomb has been dropped by Beck and others. Quinn Hillier, writing in the American Spectator, compares Obama's rescue plan to the economic policies of fascist Italy.
It first started with the takeover of the banks. And when you start taking over banks, you've done the very first step that Mussolini did. And again, every time you centralize power in that way, you start to erode freedom.
Liberals were quick to poke fun.
That's not tyranny. That's democracy. See, now you're in the minority. It's supposed to taste like a taco.
All joking aside, one academic says conservatives are spooked by the intervention of President Obama and even of President Bush, seeing it as a threat to the foundation of free market America.
What it does is bring back all the old Reagan-esque ideas about government being the problem, government interfering with your life, government taking away your freedoms.
The removal of General Motors president was particularly upsetting to conservatives.
When you have the president of the United States, in effect, firing the head of a private company, you all of a sudden are no longer dealing with free enterprise.
Which raises the question, how will any of this name-calling play on Main Street?
To say fascist, autocrat, communist, dictator, those are very extreme terms. Most Americans don't buy that.
So far, at least, that's backed up by CNN's latest poll. 65% of all Americans say the increased government involvement in how businesses are run is just about right or could be increased. That's not likely to cool the conservative rhetoric.
We have new media, new political media, and they encourage a kind of extremist language. They encourage what I call apocalypticism. Everyone you don't like becomes Hitler or Stalin.
Apocalypticism, say that three times fast. You know, often that extremist rhetoric generates big ratings on TV and on the radio, and that translates into big money. Another reason to keep the rhetoric heated. One more thing to keep in mind, some liberals were pretty harsh in describing President Bush and his policies. And it's not like some liberals aren't totally in love with President Obama's policies. Some have criticized them too, but Kieran, they haven't dropped the F-bomb.
There's a lot in that clip to chew on. And no, I can't say apocalypticism three times fast. But pretty much everything in there is correct. talking about the banks and talking about fascism. But of course they make it funny and say, oh, it's the F word. And mention a poll where most Americans say they're not meddling enough in the phony free market. Unfortunately, most Americans don't read and don't remember their history. But again, I'm no genius at any of this. I've just been paying really close attention for the last 8+ years. And I can't even still, I should have taken notes as the clip was playing of things I wanted to address in there, but there you have it. From the sort of biblical imagery of apocalypticism, it's an easy jump to Area 51, UFO sightings, and codename Oxcart. Now, as we make this transition, something I should point out, because at the intersection of these two things, apocalypticism and ufology, stands Operation Bluebeam, fake rapture, fake alien invasion. Call it what you like. 2 weeks ago, Clyde Lewis at the Ground Zero Lounge did a whole episode on Operation Bluebeam. And I also want to note that as of late, Clyde Lewis and the Ground Zero Lounge archives have been a little up in the air, so I have not been posting them because I don't have their server space. However, my man Glenn at Cascadia Public Radio, which if you go on radioforall.net and look for the user WTC7, Glenn in Cascadia Public Radio catches all of the best alternative news, radio, and podcasts, cuts out the news, busts them down to an easily downloadable size, and posts constantly to radioforall.net. So if you subscribe to Cascadia Public Radio through radioforall.net, that's just another way you can get Media Monarchy, The Corbett Report, Ground Zero Lounge, Outside the Box, What Really Happened, Webster Tarpley, on and on and on. So again, a huge thanks to Glenn at Cascadia Public Radio. But back to Area 51, UFO sightings and codename Oxcart. Again, from Raw Story and Raw Replay, as well as interesting links to the CIA.gov, as well as Wikipedia and the Los Angeles Times. Former employees are coming forward to talk about their work at a secret military facility known as Area 51. For decades, there have been UFO reports and sightings near Area 51. The CIA has recently declassified a program that may explain some of those sightings. Thomas Barnes told Fox's Bill Hemmer that a secret plane codenamed Oxcart, O-X-C-A-R-T, Oxcart, was certainly mistaken for a UFO. The A-12 Oxcart flew 2,850 missions out of Area 51. The plane could fly at 3 times the speed of sound at an altitude of 90,000 feet. The A-12 Oxcart program was shut down in the late 60s. Other projects at Area 51 remain a secret. The Los Angeles Times broke a lot of this open with their article, The Road to Area 51. But again, on Fox recently, Area 51 employees explain UFO sightings.
Area 51 is the most famous military institution in the world, and officially it did not exist. Officially, but you can find it about 100 miles outside of Las Vegas. And here on the launch pad, we can show you tucked between an Air Force base and an abandoned nuclear testing ground, again, about 100 miles outside of town, way out in Nevada's high desert area. It has become now the holy grail of conspiracy theorists, with all kinds of wild stories about UFOs. It was even referenced in the hit movie Independence Day. Area 51 was connected by a series of underground tunnels and trains to other secret facilities in that part of the country. But what's the real story? For the first time, a few former employees now are speaking out, and two of them are legends. Joining me now, former physicist Edward Lovett, age 90, and former project specialist Thornton T.D. Barnes, age 72. And gentlemen, welcome to both of you. And Mr. Barnes, I'd like to start with you. You've kept secrets for almost 50 years. Why did you want to work there in the first place?
It was a project that we realized was saving countless lives in the Vietnam War. That was the our focus at that time. The North Vietnamese had a approximately 9-to-1 kill ratio against our pilots. We were getting shot down left and right, and we needed to know what our troops were facing before they got there. So the CIA developed the what we call the Oxcart, the A-12 predecessor to the SR-71, and the primary purpose of it was to overfly Russia. However, we never flew over Russia at all with it. We used it in the Vietnam War to locate the missile sound sites that our pilots would encounter as they went on sorties into North Vietnam.
So this was top secret stuff.
Once again, there are UFOs, but they ain't alien. Again, there's a lot to go into there. Area 51, UFO sightings, and codename Oxcart. Now, it was interesting, he said it was all for Vietnam, but I thought it just said Oxcart was shut down in the late 60s. The bottom note here on this posting takes us to the Honolulu Exopolitics Examiner, noting Reagan Records and Space Command Anti-Gravity Fleet. On April 13th, the National Archive Records Administration made available almost 250,000 pages of documents from President Ronald Reagan's administration. It'll, of course, take several months for researchers to read through the documents. The released material may yield insight into a curious comment found in President Reagan's diary, entry Tuesday, June 11th, 1985, page 334 reads, quote, "Lunch with five top space scientists. It was fascinating. Space truly is the last frontier, and some of the developments there in astronomy, etc., are like science fiction, except they are real. I learned that our shuttle capacity is such that we could orbit 300 people." This interesting and sourced article goes on and, of course, also notes hidden within one of the 10 unified combatant commands of the U.S. Military Strategic Command, STRATCOM, is a highly classified fleet of aircraft carrier anti-gravity vehicle that operates in outer space. Or that could, or that will. Reagan Records from NARA.gov. So that's our little bit on ufology. And again, I'll point you to Clyde Lewis at the Ground Zero Lounge. Great at breaking down a lot of the semiology and symbology of what's been going down in the world of the paranormal becoming seemingly much more normal. It's time for a few Oregon oddities. The CIA family in 24-hour Portland patrols. This first from the Associated Press. Son of convicted CIA spy freed in Oregon. A federal judge has ordered the son of former CIA double agent Jim Nicholson freed pending trial on charges of collecting money for his dad's former service to Russia. The son, 24-year-old Nathaniel Nicholson of Eugene is accused of smuggling messages from his father, who's serving 23 years at the Federal Correctional Institution in Sheridan, Oregon, transporting messages, smuggling messages to Russian Federation officials in Mexico, Peru, and Cyprus. U.S. District Judge Anna Brown granted release, saying he could have fled last December when questioned by the FBI, but didn't. Prosecutors had said Nathaniel Nicholson might flee to Russia, or a Russian consulate, rather, for asylum. Jim Nicholson is the highest-ranking CIA agent ever convicted of espionage. The younger Nicholson was ordered to have no contact of any kind with his father. So that's famous CIA double agent Harold James Nicholson and his son Nathaniel. We flash back, we've noted this before, back in January, on MediaMonarchy.com, jailed CIA spy enlisted Oregonian son to collect from Russian agents. The other one, from the Oregonian, with links and documentation, going to KTVZ.com as well as Oregon.gov, Oregon State Police will resume 24-hour Portland patrols. Oregon State Troopers say they will resume 24-hour patrols for the first time in 6 years in the Portland, Oregon metropolitan area. The state police say they have been patrolling the state's most populous regions 20 hours a day and relying on local law enforcement agencies to fill the gap from 2 a.m. to 6. Beginning last Wednesday, the patrol says troopers will be on round-the-clock patrols 4 out of 7 days. The goal is to increase that to full coverage 7 days a week by July. The patrol has been rebuilding its patrol forces since 2007. Earlier budget cuts curtailed some patrols. It says the Central Point Command Office returned to around-the-clock coverage in December, and other offices will resume 24/7 coverage in coming months. Are they prepping for the so-called summer of rage? Now it's time for some really important updates. This is one of those stories that I should either put at the very beginning or at the very end. I didn't want to do this at the end because I didn't want to run out of time. This story is a mystery to me, and to those in Loudoun County, Virginia. The murder of William Bennett, ex-CIA contractor. We covered this story 2 weeks ago on MediaMonarchy.com. The death of William Bennett, CIA contractor, killers, and Kosovo questions. In recent days, I noticed a massive uptick in interest in this story coming to MediaMonarchy.com from around the world. And I started to notice a lot of interest coming from China. We'll get into a lot of that at the end when we go over the creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. It's interesting to note that, of course, in the heavily censored internet world of China, some of the links were coming through web proxies, so I know that people were looking at it in a roundabout way. That's what let me know that this story is still important and still growing. I'm going to run down some of the articles and some of the headlines. Updates on the murder of William Bennett, ex-CIA contractor. One of the first we have, and one of the best sources covering the murder of William Bennett, is the Loudoun Independent, loudouni.com, and it's L-O-U-D-O-U-N-I. In an exclusive interview with Jim Plowman, the Loudoun Independent asked the Commonwealth's attorney about the tragic murder of William Bennett and the brutal beating of his wife, Cynthia, on March 22nd, 322. A rattled community is still left with more questions than answers. a bunch of updates from my FoxDC.com now that Cynthia Bennett is talking to detectives. Loudoun County Sheriff Steve Simpson says one of the victims of a mysterious attack that took place last month in a Lansdowne neighborhood in Loudoun County, Virginia. Cynthia Bennett has regained consciousness and spoken to detectives on several occasions about the incident, which left her husband dead. The Loudoun County Sheriff's Office says they're currently seeking 4 to 5 people who were involved in the attack and murder. They say all of those people have knowledge of the attack, though they have different degrees of involvement in the incident. And again, links in there to WJLA.com, WTOP.com, Loudoun Extra at the Washington Post, LeesburgToday.com, to the Loudoun County Sheriff's Office themselves. But again, some of the updates from MyFoxDC, CIA and FBI investigating couple's attack. Couple's attack may be random. Neighbors want answers in Virginia murder. Murder and attack has neighbors worried, and motive still unclear. I collected, through many of those sites that we just mentioned, I have 7 videos so far covering the murder of William Bennett. They're up on youtube.com/mediamonarchy. I have a playlist for you. You can watch all of those. It's almost an hour of video now, as we've been tracking this story. We're going to listen to a quick edit of many of the clips, and we'll come back and break down why this story is so important and why it keeps growing and why it's been going viral around the world, the murder of William Bennett's ex-CIA contractor.
A brutal beating killed a husband and critically hurt his wife, and tonight she is finally talking to police. Detectives say William and Cynthia Bennett were attacked on March 22nd by a group of men while they were out taking a morning walk in their Lansdowne home. And tonight detectives still think this was a random attack. Jay Corp has been on the story since it first broke. He's with us now live with more on what Cynthia Bennett is saying to detectives. Jay.
Well, Leanne, investigators are marveling at Cynthia Bennett's ability to emerge from this brutal attack inflicted upon her and then muster up the strength to talk with them. And they certainly hope her information over time will lead to arrests. News that 55-year-old Cynthia Bennett has talked with investigators comes as a major development in a case that has terrified this Loudoun County community.
Living around here, we don't know what could happen, what's been happening, or, you know, who's plotting what.
Authorities say they've spoken with Bennett a few times in the last few days, albeit briefly, while she's been recovering from numerous surgeries. Despite her condition, investigators believe that over time, her recollections will help lead authorities to the men who attacked her and killed her husband, William.
We're very optimistic that she's going to be able to provide significant information in this case very soon.
Based on conversations with Bennett, police believe at least 4 to 5 suspects riding in a white panel van attacked the couple somewhere between their home and a trail along Riverside Parkway in Lansdowne. While authorities are still concerned that these attacks may have been random, conversations with Cynthia Bennett have yet to shed light on why.
No names have been given, no reasons why this could have happened have been given.
Everybody's anxious, everybody's following the news, everybody watch every move everybody makes.
Stefan Peterson, who lives near the crime scene, considers Bennett speaking a huge break in this case.
I'm very ecstatic to hear that, because it might give us some closure on the investigation.
In another new development, the FBI has created a behavioral profile of the suspects. They believe that these men may have been missing work of late, may be nervous or irritable, may be drinking more alcohol, and may be showing an increased interest in talking about crime or crimes. Live in Lansdowne, Jay Corf, ABC 7.
Many theories of how and why have been offered up in regards to this situation. Your reaction to these and their credibility, including gang, CIA.
Well, there's a lot of theories going around, and we basically assess and develop theories as we gather evidence, the investigators do. And some of them are viable, and then the evidence may lead you to think that they're, you know, you may want to discount a certain theory, one or the other. right now, we're not in the business of putting out theories to the public, because there's no point in putting out something that may turn out to not be the case. And the last thing you want to do is alarm the public, get rumor mills started. That's how people become alarmed. Situation that may not actually be the case.
Add new clues in a brutal attack on a Virginia couple. We are also getting a glimpse into the mind of the attackers. Thanks for joining us this evening. I'm Sean Yancey.
And I'm Laura Evans, and tonight for Brian. 2 weeks ago, William Bennett was found murdered in Lansdowne, Virginia, his wife critically injured. But tonight she is talking, and she's providing clues that could help investigators figure out who attacked her and who killed her husband. Fox says Will Thomas is in the newsroom to start us off tonight.
Well, Laura, Sean, two big developments. Cynthia Bennett is awake and talking, and she's giving investigators something to go on. Also tonight, law enforcement is giving you at home something to go on. Behavioral traits to look for that may help flush out the group of attackers.
She's willing to work with us. She wants to work with us.
The Loudoun County Sheriff has renewed hope investigators will catch the killers. Cynthia Bennett, savagely beaten March 22nd during a Sunday walk with her husband, is now able to speak with investigators. Neighbors are encouraged by the news.
Right now, this is the best news ever.
Well, I guess it depends what she knows, but at this point, I think she's the best lead they have.
55-year-old Bennett first communicated last Wednesday by nodding her head. In the weeks since, she's managed to speak briefly in between facial reconstruction surgeries. Based on interviews with Bennett, the sheriff's office believes there are 4 to 5 attackers who dressed in dark clothing. One of the men appeared larger than the others. Witnesses also reported seeing a white van near the scene of the attacks along Riverside Parkway in Lansdowne. 57-year-old William Bennett, a former Green Beret and a contract worker for the CIA, did not survive. Cynthia is still in ICU.
The surgeries obviously make a difference there, and it slows that process down. But our main concern, obviously, at this point is that she gets better, and we're not pushing this harder than she's able to deal with.
Sheriff Simpson issued behavioral characteristics that may now be consistent with the attackers, unexpectedly leaving the area, unnatural interest in the crime, increased consumption of alcohol, missing work, nervousness or irritability.
A former FBI profiler told me tonight those characteristics would be consistent with behavior after someone committed the crimes. The sheriff says they're looking at whether the couple may have known the attackers, whether this could have been related to Mr. Bennett's former CIA connection, or if this was just totally random. Laura, let's hope money talks. A $50,000 reward is being offered.
So, Will, thank you.
She knows the people who did this. I'm not aware of at this point. No names have been given. No reasons why this could happen have been given. No additional detailed suspect information at this time, other than there was at least the 4 or 5 initial people that we had talked about, maybe more. Still the same basic descriptions that we had with the dark clothing. One of the male subjects that was involved was a larger male than the others. We've gotten no more detail at this point than that. I do feel confident that as time goes on, we'll probably be able to get further with that. She does seem to recall the incident. The communication is a little difficult at this time.
You believe now that this was a random act?
Well, we still don't know that 100% whether it's random or not. It indicates to me that it could very well just be a random act. That obviously is our worst fear, certainly the community's worst fear as well. That same feeling the community would have of, gee, this could have been me or could be me next time, we're not at a point where we can comfortably say that that's not a possibility. So while it's still undetermined, we have to certainly look at the fact that it was random as a very strong possibility.
But are you leaning more now towards random than towards targeted?
That's kind of hard to answer. I wouldn't say we're leaning more that way than anyway, to be honest with you, because we don't know 100%. We don't know, you know, the speculation of the government involvement or any other government involvement, that type of thing, we're not necessarily saying that's the case. But could they have been targeted for some other reason other than some past dealings that either one of them may have had with the job? Could they have been targeted for some other reason locally, recently? You know, any different type. Maybe they witnessed something. Those kinds of things. Those options are still out there when we talk about random versus targeted, because targeted is pretty broad as well. And we're still trying to narrow that down. And until we actually know for sure, that's kind of where we have to leave it.
That's just a little bit from my playlist up on YouTube.com/Media Monarchy, The Murder of William Bennett, ex-CIA contractor. Like I said, there's a lot more video to go through. The last person we heard there was the Loudoun County Sheriff, Steve Simpson. I have all the raw video, about 20 minutes of his press conference. But let's now go into specifically the NATO bombing of the People's Republic of China embassy in Belgrade. On May 7, 1999, in Operation Allied Force, NATO bombs hit the PRC embassy in Belgrade, Yugoslavia, killing three PRC citizens and outraging the PRC public. At the time of the bombing, the embassy was located in the Novi Beograd. Later, a new site was designated for the embassy in Dedinje, D-E-D-I-N-J-E. NATO later apologized for the bombing, saying that it occurred because of an outdated map provided by the CIA. Few Chinese accepted this explanation, believing the strike had been deliberate. William Bennett, as a CIA contractor, was involved in this mapping with NATO. And once I went into this story, it made me realize why I was getting so much attention from China on my postings of the murder of William Bennett. Because to them, it's a mysterious, unexplained event. It's their conspiracy theory. So I'm going to have to leave it right there, but again, I'm going to keep following this story. Send me any updates that you may have. And yes, it's now time for another ugly news purge. A bunch of links that I don't have time to get into fully on the site or the show. It's the 416 news purge. Always important, never being able to do justice to the wild amount of news going on in the world. So starting at the top with the Obamasiah and the Apostles of War, still using the religious imagery, apocalypticism, Cryptogon Notes, as well as NBC out of Washington. Jesus was missing from Obama's recent Georgetown speech, although there was some nice pyramid symbolism, though. There's a photo for you in this story, basically, giving a speech in a building where you could see Jesus, so they covered it up with a pyramid. Can't make this up. Obama advisor and Council on Foreign Relations vice president says 100+ thousand troops and 10+ years needed in Afghanistan. That's from theendrun.com. Obama to release Reagan records kept secret by Bush. That's from Raw Story. Times Online. Obama's half-brother linked to UK sex attack. Gordon Brown's plan for an army of teen volunteers. That's from The Telegraph. And, of course, mirroring Rahm Emanuel's plan for forced national service. Obama's tapped the fifth RIAA lawyer to come to the Justice Department. Our fine friends at the Recording Industry Association of America, suing their customers. The NSC's Invisible Man, that's from Alex Constantine. And of course, now, finally, the first dog has arrived to the White House. Bo. Which, of course, are the initials of the president. He's a mutt. Peacenik's target killer drones, that's from Danger Room. ACLU fears Obama administration may destroy evidence at CIA black sites. That's from Raw Story. Naomi Klein has a new article breaking down Obama and the rhetoric of hope. That's from The Guardian. And as we mentioned at the beginning, Obama's car czar, Stephen Ratner, involved in a New York pension scam investigation. Yet another Obama insider involved in fraudulent money shenanigans. One positive thing. From the New York Times, Obama unveils high-speed rail plan. This has been something that folks like Webster Tarpley have been talking about for a long time. If you want to do something to help the infrastructure of the country, how about some magnetic levitation trains? I didn't see any specific reference to maglev trains. However, this is a positive development. Interestingly enough, in an update to this from KansasCity.com, Kansas City figures in Obama's high-speed scheme. Because it's important to note that Kansas City is, of course, a port city in the coming North American Union and the NASCO Superhighway. Hit that link. But let's move to Police State International, where we learn that SAIC is going to train FEMA emergency responders. That's right, SAIC and FEMA together again, training emergency responders. That's from WashingtonTechnology.com. SAIC was also awarded a $104 million contract by Homeland Stupidity and FEMA. It all ties in together. That second one's from SAIC themselves, Science Applications International. Homeland Stupidity has, of course, issued their right-wing extremism report despite concerns. That's from the Associated Press. And, of course, noted by Infowars.com is that this extremism document with its date stamp actually goes back to 2007. So that's under Bush, and that shows yet again that they generally have these things all written out, all ready to go. All they need is the catalyzing event. DHS predicts violence in response to new gun restrictions. And, of course, their warning of right-wing radicals. That's from the Washington Times. And again, and again, and again, I'll tell you again that I said when the Dems came in, we would switch back to homegrown errorism. McVeighs and Columbines and shooters and right-wing constitutionalist nut jobs. Concerned residents aim to form an armed militia to patrol Stockton. That's from RecordNet.com. Self-righteous neocons complain about the DHS report. Of course, always griping at the other phony side for things they wanted to do. One's in favor, one's out of favor. A whole swath of news on the National Security Agency, of course, set up by the National Security Act of 1947, creating the surveillance state. NSA broke new eavesdropping law. That's from Threat Level, as well from Think Progress. NSA spied on a congressman, and Raw Story notes that NSA broke new laws when it spied on this yet unnamed member of Congress. New York Times also notes NSA intercepts exceed limits set by Congress. Pentagon closes office accused of issuing propaganda under Bush. That's also from the New York Times. GreenIsTheNewRed.com notes that secretive U.S. prison units are being used and will be used to house Muslims, animal rights, and environmental activists. Camps don't exist. You've just never looked up the civilian inmate labor program. Emergency crews test skills during attack drill at Toyota Park in Chicago. That's from SouthTownStar.com. Second 9/11 envisaged by Homeland Security. Prepping Chicago with new emergency measures. That's from the Chicago Sun-Times. Bouncers hired by schools as crowd control from the Telegraph. Portland, Maine police are boosting their arsenal with a tank. That's from the Press-Herald. Billings, Montana police get military vehicle to fight crime. That's from the BillingsGazette.net. Guns and drugs seized from Homeland Stupidity officer from CFNews13.com. York Hospital drill simulates terror attack. Philpott Dam drill enacted in Virginia. That's from the Martinsville Bulletin. Federal judge sexually assaults two women, gets off scot-free. That's from CFCAmerica.org. JustGetThere.us notes that the easiest way to destroy a movement is to become one. We've got some clips of Alex Jones recently on the Alan Colmes show, getting actually a somewhat even-handed acceptance. Gerald Celente notes on Yonkers Tribune that a revolution is the only solution. I'd rather have some revelations before a revolution. And that ain't biblical. That's personal. UK police arrest 114 for planning a coal plant protest, and that's from planetsave.com. G20 death, of course, Ian Tomlinson, newspaper seller, more or less killed by the cops during the G20 fracas, now brings a fresh attempt to overturn the ban on photographing the police. And, of course, Russia and Iraq are calling for a fair New World Order. That's from China View. And now it's on to the cyberspace war. Cybersecurity Act of 2009, which will bring federal authority over the Internet. That is from the Electronic Frontier Foundation, EFF.org. Obama breaking promise for online transparency. That's from Threat Level. Cyber Act would give the press power to shut down the Internet. That's from Raw Story. No one is ready for this. Talking about the coming cyber space war. That's on U.TV. Using Linux might be a sign of criminal activity. Operation Juniper Cobra is the name for the U.S. and Israel holding a new massive major military missile intercept drill coming soon. That's from JTA.org as well as KuwaitTimes.net. China denies the recent cyber attacks on the U.S. power grid from Computer World. One dead, one injured in Russian military exercises. Pentagon fights the global war on bugs. That's from military.com. Robotic gardeners. MIT droids tend plants. U.S. News and World Report. Military spending up, carbon footprint down, from cleantechnica.com. Concerns about chemtrails given fresh impetus, what with all the talk about geoengineering the atmosphere. We also note again our friends, private military contractors, SAIC, were also awarded $12 million from the U.S. Air Force Weather Agency. And Obama advisor Holdren backpedaled on his initial geoengineering announcement, but then called for geoengineering the atmosphere yet again a couple days later. He just couldn't help himself. You know, it's in all the CFR think tank papers. And finally, a scary update from early this morning. The Pirate Bay has been found guilty. Infamous peer-to-peer site out of Sweden. Pirate Bay found guilty. Now some history mystery. We, of course, knew, but more documentation from boingboing.net, of course, that Ronald Reagan was an FBI snitch. Khmer Rouge jailer says U.S. contributed to Pol Pot's rise. That's from Reuters, and we've heard Brzezinski say it himself. California returns two paintings that the Nazis stole, and William Randolph Hearst bought. That's from the Sacramento Bee. U.S. was set to detain Nazi suspect, but then they halted John Demjanjuk's deportation. We went over the case of Demjanjuk many months ago on MediaMonarchy.com. Those two recent reports from the BBC and the Washington Times. Swastikas painted on a French memorial from Jerusalem Post. Ex-CIA operative tied to Cuba bombings, so says the jury. Bombing victim's brother applauds that indictment of Luis Posada. AllGov.com asked the question, is a CIA murderer living free in Virginia? And I don't believe that actually even relates to William Bennett. There's also a symposium coming up to whitewash CIA's Air America heroin smuggling operation. Fidel Castro has a piece posted up on globalresearch.ca talking about the Bay of Pigs and days that cannot be forgotten. Again, April 20th is also the anniversary of the Bay of Pigs disaster. Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, one of the founders of the Bilderberg Group, was, of course, deeply involved in the weapons trade. That coming from Danish publications by way of InfoWars. The links are there to the original publications. If you can read it, do it. We also note from the Telegraph that inbreeding caused the demise of the Spanish Habsburg dynasty. We, of course, always note that the Galtons and the Huxleys and the Wedgwoods and those eugenicists all tried a little inbreeding experience, and it didn't go very well. The last history mystery note there is, of course, coke and sex at Bush's Department of the Interior. That's from Talking Points Memo. And in the media memes, it's springtime for Hitler in Germany. The producers goes up for the first time in Germany. U.S. media in the memory hole from Consortium News. Newspapers go green in a manner of speaking. The more correct way to say would be that their print versions are basically dying and they have to go to online. Porn star Marilyn Chambers was found dead in Los Angeles. No cause yet announced. However, Phil Spector has been convicted of murder. That's from Wikinews as well as the Deutsche Press Agency. Convicted of the murder of Lana Clarkson, I believe is her name. The Local Community Radio Act of 2009, H.R. 1147, is dead. No local community radio for you. On an interesting note, out of Iran, we had some snakes on a motherfucking Qantas plane. Snakes being carried in the cargo somehow got out on a Qantas plane, and it triggered a landing. Art imitates life, imitates politics. The last note on media memes, an economist from Columbia University passed out live on a recent Glenn Beck show. It's not much of an audio clip for me to play for you, but you should definitely check it out, and it's always one of those things that I love. I love when live media is derailed. It's actually one of my main drivers of being involved in the media. So my favorite things from media and films, whether it's Pump Up the Volume with pirate broadcast and bringing Uprising to the school, or even in V for Vendetta when he takes over the television station, locks it down, lays it out. Or if you recall the sci-fi series from the early 80s, V, where they hijack a media event and expose the new visitors for the lizard people that they are. I love when media is derailed. The last notes here on the 416 News Purge. Murder and mayhem. The first one we note is a frightening one. From KansasCity.com, the FBI notes that many of the murder victims that are found along America's highways were actually murdered by truckers. And then the breakdown. And we asked the question last week, is mass murder contagious? Is it copycat? Is it media? Is it a contagion? Is it all those things? We'll note the recent murder and mayhem. Today, early this morning, news still spilling out. Three dead in a California hospital shooting. That's today, April 17th. Two killed in Michigan college shooting last Friday, April 10th. We also have man-woman dead in murder-suicide at Michigan College. These are coming from Fox News, CNN, Wikinews. On the same day, April 10th, there were also shootings in Greece. On the next day, on the 11th, there were shootings in Rotterdam, in the Netherlands. We also have, from Examiner.com, repeating the Poplawski slander against Alex Jones, conflating people like Poplawski, visiting sites like Stormfront, and wrapping up the whole alternative news movement with crazy extremist, racist, militia, constitutionalist. But back to the death and destruction. Tornadoes and wildfire leave 8 dead in the U.S. on April 11th. Woman and 2 kids shot dead in a New Orleans suburb on April 11th. California Sunday school teacher booked in child's death. Sunday school killer shocks California town. That's from the Deutsche Press Agency as well as the Associated Press. The Huffington Post has gone over copycats with a hat tip again to Lauren Coleman, author of The Copycat Effect. Killer who tore out his own eyes fuels the Texas debate on the insanity defense. That's from the Dallas Morning News. U.S. soldier says he saw Sergeant chase and shoot his comrade. Virginia Tech has reopened the site of the U.S. school massacre occurring 2 years ago today. That's from Raw Story. Again, from Copycat Effect, marketing Columbine in Virginia Tech. and a decade after Columbine, gun laws as lax as ever, and 10 years later, the real story behind Columbine. Those coming from USA Today, the Deutsche Press Agency, and more. The last thing we'll note on this 416 News Purge is, of course, I would be remiss if we didn't mention the Pirates of the Caribbean. That would be the Arabian Sea. Last Friday, it was a breaking story, of course, more Somali pirate action. Fortunately, it ended well. They got the captain back. We've also got an article linked up where Ron Paul says we should bring back private pirate hunters. And I'm going to have to stop right there. So we're not going to be able to get on to the marijuana legalization or all the latest updates on foodworldorder.com, the new site from me covering EnviroHealth and the AgriPharma Industrial Complex. So we'll have to get to that at another time in another episode, perhaps. We do want to note from Google News right now, by way of Oregon Public Broadcasting, Oregon ranks second nationally in unemployment. Michigan and its struggling carmakers claim the dubious distinction of having the nation's highest jobless rate at 12.6%, but Oregon is not far behind at 12.1%. Oregon ranks second in the nation in unemployment. And I note, and I've noted, and others have noted, that it generally doesn't seem to stop folks from coming to Oregon. Hell, it didn't stop me. We only have a couple minutes left. I brought the Copycat Effect with me. I keep wanting to read the entry from Lauren Coleman about the significance of dates. As we've been seeing, all the March Madness, the April assassinations, the murder and mayhem, the death and destruction. Is it a contagion? Is it the copycat effect? Is it live? Is it Memorex? In this piece, he does break down how, at some point in the 90s, everything kind of moved to March and April. Patriots Day on April 19th. That's also in 1943, when the Nazis entered the Warsaw Ghetto. In 93, the Waco Raid occurred. In 95, Oklahoma City. We, of course, also have Hitler's birthday on April 20th. And today is the two-year anniversary of the Virginia Tech Massacre. And again, I won't talk to you again before we reach April 20th, 420, Earth Day, Weed Day, Patriots Day, Hitler's Birthday, Bay of Pigs, Oklahoma City, Waco, Columbine, all of those dates all swirl around. So I would say keep your eyes very open. And that's all I'm going to say, because I have to get now to the interesting list of creepy customers coming to Media Monarchy in the past week. We have Macmillan McGraw-Hill School Publishing Company out of New York Googling, man defecates on plane. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios out of L.A. reading about Banksy, famed graffiti artist leaving his mark on the Holy Land. We had H&R Block out of Kansas City, Missouri. We had the Department of Homeland Security out of Springfield, Virginia. We had the Bank of America out of Walnut Creek, California. We had NORAD out of Colorado Springs, Colorado, Googling Renart Biometrics AP. Gene Renart, R-E-N-U-A-R-T, of course, head of Northcom. The National Automobile Dealers Association, NADA, Googled Lansdowne Jogger Killers. And this was the point when I noticed still the massive attention on the case of William Bennett, the murder of William Bennett, ex-CIA contractor. So we're going to hear a lot of visits from a lot of interesting places, all concerning William Bennett, CIA. Shanghai Committee Party member out of Shanghai, China. We had the Beijing Application Institute of Information Technology, Google, 1999, March 22nd, Virginia, CIA, kill William. Hong Kong University of Science and Technology, Science and Tech Network Communications out of Shanghai, The Voice of America out of D.C. Googled William Bennett, CIA. The United States Department of State Googled William Bennett, CIA. The Savannah College of Art and Design Googled Rockefeller, Internet 2, C-SPAN. Beijing Television Googled William Bennett killed. U.S. Geological Survey Googled William Bennett, CIA. Federal Reserve Board, William Bennett Lansdowne. WVU, West Virginia University, out of Morgantown, Googled William Bennett, CIA. The Bank of Nova Scotia hit me up from one of the links out of Japan that I linked up for you. It's really bizarre to see a page of nothing but Chinese characters. And then within there, MediaMonarchy.com. The National Library of Medicine, out of Scottsdale. IBM Corporation Googled William Bennett, CIA. It's also interesting to note that their ISP is bluebird.ibm.com. Sinister Forces by Peter Lavenda notes that Bluebird was the original name of Project Artichoke. Early CIA mind control programs. Alan Dulles changed the name to Artichoke from Bluebird. But I digress. Henry Ford Hospital out of Detroit hit me up from one of the other Chinese websites linking to updates on the murder of William Bennett. We also had the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. We also had a Pioneer Hybrid, a DuPont company, Google William Bennett, killed in Virginia. ConocoPhillips out of Houston Googled Edwin Black, the plan. Of course, Edwin Black, author of IBM and the Holocaust and War Against the Weak. His new book is called The Plan. It's basically about alternative energies. So, of course, ConocoPhillips is quite interested in that. USA Today out of Waldorf, Maryland, Googled William Bennett's murder. The Middleburg Bank out of Leesburg, Virginia, Googled updates on William Bennett's murder. Leesburg, Virginia, also seeing a recent murder, which, though probably not connected to the ex-CIA contractor beaten to death, it still rattles an already nervous community. The Royal Canadian Mounted Police, RCMP, out of Ottawa. Columbia University out of New York Googled William Bennett murder. The Sony Corporation out of Japan Googled William Bennett murder contractor. And finally, China Science and Technology Network out of Beijing hit me up from yet another Chinese page that links to MediaMonarchy.com covering updates on the murder of William Bennett. And there it is. Episode 119 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's April 17th, 2009. Again, huge thanks to all of you out there who get in touch with me, who help spread the word and the show and the site. Cascadia Public Radio, Boulder Free Radio, Free Radio Olympia, Revere Radio Network, and originating from right here in downtown Portland, Oregon at the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. My name is James Evan Pilato, reminding you, telling you, urging you to get active or get radioactive. Take care.
Police would get him just the same.